Among the many bizarre stories about the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un was one a few years back reporting that he had given an order that all male university students in the country were to have their hair cut in a style that imitated his own. I'm not one to make jokes about people's haircuts, but such displays of ego often seem a bit comical. But there's actually a long history of political rulers demanding similar sorts of worship from their subjects. In the ancient world, they just came right out and declared themselves to be gods and insisted that people worship them as such on pain of death. Kim Jong-un's haircut edict seems relatively tame by comparison. There's an example of this kind of thing going on in the background of the gospel reading that we heard tonight about the attempt to trap Jesus with a question about paying taxes to the Romans. The question was a trap because the Romans were a hated occupation force, and the Jewish people deeply resented paying taxes to them. So if Jesus said, yes, you should pay your taxes to the Romans, his popularity ratings would take a serious plunge in the next opinion polls. But of course, if he said, no, refuse to pay the taxes, then he would probably be arrested by the Romans within minutes, and the Jewish authorities would have successfully got rid of him without having to lift a hand themselves. It seemed like the perfect trap. But Jesus manages to spring the trap without getting himself caught in it. Show me the coin used for the tax, he says. And they hand him a coin. Snap! He's got them already. Because this incident took place inside the temple precinct, and you were not supposed to bring such a coin into the temple. That's why they had money changers at the temple. Jesus' question points straight to the reason that you weren't allowed to bring these coins into the temple. Whose image is this? And whose title? The image on the coin was the emperor's, and the inscription read, Tiberius Caesar, son of God, high priest. To any devoutly religious Jew, that made the coin a blasphemous idol, an insult to God. Certainly not something you would bring into the sacred temple, a temple that was holy to the one true God of Israel. So Jesus has already gained the upper hand big time in the argument with the Pharisees when they made their strategic error of letting it be seen that they had carried this despised image into the temple. This tendency of self-obsessed rulers to promote their own image for worship and adulation has some interesting implications. It's often said that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and no doubt that's why Kim Jong-un thought that everybody should imitate his hairstyle. He believed himself worthy of such flattery, and it was his subjects' duty to give it to him. The hairstyles and clothing styles of the most popular royals have always set trends. But it looks a bit tragic and self-defeating when a ruler tries to enforce it. But their desire to be imitated is enormous. But it does have definite limits. A narcissistic dictator is delighted if people imitate his appearance and mannerisms and perhaps his speech style, but they never want people to start imitating their tendency to grab power and take control. Anyone who starts imitating them in that is instantly a rival and an enemy. A mirror image enemy, perhaps, but certainly an enemy. Imitation is not allowed to go that far. Imitation actually always has a risk of rivalry. If you think, you know, a couple of teenagers modelling themselves on the same celebrity, they may be drawn together by their common obsession, but they can just as easily become the bitterest of rivals over who gets to stand out as the most perfect imitation of the celebrity model. Imitation can be fraught with those kind of dangers. And yet, in our reading from Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, we heard the apostle commending the Thessalonian believers for becoming imitators of us and of the Lord. This is one of a number of places where the apostle Paul suggests that the usual pathway to growth in faith and discipleship is by imitating others who have already made some good progress in their imitation of the Lord. And of course, the call to follow Jesus is a call to model ourselves on Jesus, to follow his example, to imitate him. Not his hairstyle, although I have been accused of trying to do that, but his way of doing things, his attitude and values and behaviours. There's an important reason why imitating Jesus does not carry the same risk of plunging us into rivalry, that, like those other examples of imitation do. And the reason is that Jesus is not the least bit threatened by our imitation. He is not in rivalry with anyone else. And because Jesus is not a control freak who seeks to grasp and monopolise power, there's no danger that people imitating him will end up trying to usurp him. Jesus' pattern is to empty himself of power and to offer himself as a servant of all. So anyone who truly imitates him in that is not going to end up staging a military coup to seize power. The Apostle Paul uses his paradox to make a joke in another place when he says, if you want to compete over something, see if you can outdo one another in showing love. And since showing love to one another puts an end to trying to outdo one another, it becomes sillier and funnier than Kim Jong-un's haircut. And the Apostle Paul has made his point in the best possible way with a bit of humour. It's true that modelling ourselves on other people who in turn are modelling themselves on Jesus is one step riskier. But I'm quite sure that the apostle doesn't think that we should be indiscriminate about who we take as our models to imitate. We're not being called to have some kind of naive hero worship. Paul and many other great leaders of biblical times constantly remind us of their thorns in the flesh, their feet of clay, their treasure in earthen vessels, etc., etc. They make no claim to being perfect. And they urge us to be wise and discerning and to only follow their example as long as they can be seen to be following the example of the Lord. On Wednesday week, we'll be gathering with our neighbouring churches to celebrate All Saints' Day. It's a day when we especially remember and give thanks for those who have gone before us and set us an example and been good role models for us. The church's attempts to create a regulated system for the official recognition of saints has sometimes become rather silly and self-defeating, and some of those who have been officially declared saints were anything but. But there's still great value in acknowledging and remembering those, living or dead, whose lives and examples have shown us the way and reveal the light of God to us. In our first reading, Moses wanted to be able to see the image of God too. He asked to be able to see God so that the memory of that vision might sustain him in the difficult days and years of leadership that lay ahead of him. Moses was the one who others were going to be following and modelling themselves on. And so he was desperate for a clearer view of the Lord who he was following himself. And this event is closely related to this same kind of question about good and bad images, because the story arises out of the incident of the golden calf that we heard about last week. There's not much difference between a gold coin proclaiming the emperor as a god and a golden calf being worshipped as a god. Always the attractive thing about making your own gods is that you can project onto them whatever values and characteristics you like. When we choose our own gods, we can become as self-referential as Kim Jong-un, because the gods we are imitating are in fact imitations of us, created in our own image to embody our own needs and our own desires. Idol worship is generally just a vague disguise for the kind of self-worship that the likes of Kim Jong-un and Tiberius Caesar didn't even bother with disguising. But Moses rightly recognises that the best protection against such idol worship or self-worship is to really know the true and living God. And so he pleads for the opportunity to see God. And in a bit of divine humour, carried to us with a bit of typical earthy Hebrew humour that is usually lost in translation by the rather more prudish English translators, God offers him to let him catch sight of the divine backside as God passes by on the mountain. I'm not sure whether you want to go quite so far as to say that God flashes his bum at Moses, but that's pretty much what the text says. You want to see me in all my glory, Moses? Here, have a look at that. It's pretty much what it says. In Jesus, we've been given a much fuller image of God, God's front side, if you like, as opposed to God's backside. But for those of us who don't live in Galilee in the first century, most of the time, most of what we see of Jesus is seen as the image of Jesus appears in other people whose lives are being lived in imitation of him. Faithful and godly people become like three-dimensional icons of Jesus, windows through which we catch glimpses of the true image of God. And the point of all this imitation is that we might grow into such icons ourselves, into the fullness of the image of God in which we were created. Which, strangely enough, brings us all the way back to Jesus and his response to the tricky taxes question. You see, when they hand Jesus the coin and he draws attention to the blasphemous image of a self-obsessed emperor on it, he then says something along the lines of, well, if this blasphemous image belongs to Caesar, you better go give it to Caesar. But you had better give to God the image that belongs to God. And what is allowed in the temple that bears the image of God? You and me. Human beings created in the image of God. Human beings learning the way of Jesus by following him, by imitating the best of what we see in one another, and thus growing more and more into the destiny for which we were created, the fullness of the image of God. There's no disgrace in bringing that kind of image into the temple. In fact, that is the whole purpose of coming into the temple, to give back to God what belongs to God, our whole selves, in worship and thanksgiving and faithful service. That's what we're gathered here to do tonight, to offer ourselves to God and to one another, that we might learn from one another and see Christ in one another and grow into all that we can possibly be, all that God intended and hoped for us to be. Look around you. Yes, there are images of Christ present in the icons, in the scriptures, in the bread and wine that we will share shortly. But most importantly and most revealingly, there is the image of God in each and every person here. So let's treat one another with the honour due to the holiest images of God. And let us continue to let the light of Christ shine in us and through us to the glory of God.